The following commentary is for educational purposes only. Always consult the appropriate tax, legal, or financial professionals before acting on any information heard in this program.
Welcome to the IRA Brothers Podcast. I'm Nick Edwards.
And I'm Nathan Edwards.
And Nate and I had been talking after listening to our first several episodes together and over again since we are our number one fans. And we were thinking, gosh, this information is good and it's handy, but it might be the kind of thing that someone would just Google and read an answer to. So we thought, you know, why don't we just talk about things that we find interesting instead of things that we think people might be searching for on the internet? Nate, would you say that's accurate?
That is accurate.
And Nate came into my office today and we got into a little spat, as we often do, because we are, in fact, brothers, talking about something that we inside the business know as a risk tolerance questionnaire. And if you are a consumer of investment advice, you have probably completed a risk tolerance questionnaire at some point. And we've been going back and forth, Nate and I, for several months now about the effectiveness of risk tolerance questionnaires, specifically how they or if they actually accurately define what an investor's true risk tolerance is, and if it doesn't, how it could actually be a danger to investors if they are not using that properly and if the advisor is not using that properly. Nate, do you want to add any additional color to that statement?
Well, in our conversation today, we were also talking about how there are competing interests sometimes involved with a risk tolerance questionnaire. And so one of those interests is the regulators, right? So when a regulator comes in and they audit our business and they go through our paper trail, they want to see that a risk tolerance questionnaire has been completed for every investor. And so we provide them with these documents and the documents say what they do. And then, of course, we have the advisor who hopefully genuinely wants what is in their client's best interest and so is trying to get to the bottom of their actual risk tolerance because it is an integral part and an important part of the investment process. But we are also trying to please our regulator. So we're trying to check the box, but at the end of the day, our primary objective is to do what's in our client's best interest. And then we have our client who is just doing what we've put in front of them. And I've seen investor risk tolerance questionnaires from across the board, you know, 10 questions ranging from absolutely ludicrous because people are just trying to make it seem less boring than it needs to be, or just black and white, A, B, C, D. And so when this piece of paper is pushed across the table in front of a client, client just answers the questions because they believe that that's what's right without putting much more thought into it. And unfortunately, I know for a fact that a lot of portfolios are built based on that information. I mean, the client in a 2.5 minute sitting will fill out this risk tolerance questionnaire, an advisor will take it. If the advisor is managing assets themselves, they may build a portfolio according to that questionnaire. But a lot of times in this day and age, that advisor is not actually managing the assets. So they will pass that information on to another party, and that party builds a portfolio based on the information included in that risk tolerance questionnaire. And I don't think the investor actually understands how important it is to properly define that particular metric. And honestly, I don't think that regulators really understand how important it is to the actual investment process.
That's right. And let me give you a little peek from the regulatory side, which of course is, you know, our jobs and perhaps our entire lives' financial well-being, because if we lose our jobs or get sued into oblivion, then we're kind of done with this career.
Right.
Here's kind of how the advisor is looking at this, and this is how we look at it because this is how the regulators are looking at it. When you take a risk tolerance questionnaire, generally the underlying question people are asking to the client is, how much money can you comfortably lose, as odd as that sounds, before you start making what we might term an irrational or a poor decision based on the psychological impact of losing that much money. I think sometimes when clients take that test, depending on the underlying market environment, they're looking at how much money could I make. So we may have conflicting interests here because often when you take a risk tolerance questionnaire, the question, how much money will you lose before you go crazy and decide to do something that may be bad for you, isn't really just black and white. It's, if you made this much, would you also be comfortable if that meant you could lose this much? And I found over the years, a lot of clients, particularly in a good rising long-term bull market like we're in right now, tend to focus a little more on the positive
That's
side
right.
of that without
yeah.
really thinking about the negative side
That's
of
right.
that.
I've seen so many risk tolerance questionnaires in which there are a series of return sequence, right? And so a negative 15% drawdown will be associated with a positive 30% gain, as if that's the only possible outcome associated mm-hmm. with this particular, which is ludicrous. It's absolutely insane. So it's almost like the client is being coached into taking more risk than they're otherwise comfortable with. But you're also absolutely right. I remember immediately following the last financial crisis, people refused to take any risk. There is definitely a sliding scale, and I know that you wrote an article about this on our website called Risk Relativity, but there is a sliding scale associated with a client's risk tolerance at any point in time. And that's the problem, is that regulators look at it, and a lot of financial advisors look at it as IQ, right? Or how they used to think of IQ, that it's, you know, you're born with it and never changes. And now, in my own experience, I have found that there is probably a core anchoring process, and clients don't tend to get too far from that core anchor of their ability to tolerate risk. But during prolonged bull markets, you're absolutely right. People tend to take more risk because they perceive the risk in the market as being lower anyway. And so they focus on the gains as opposed to the downside. And the inverse is true. When times are bad, you know, they focus on the downside.
So for folks who have not yet taken a risk tolerance questionnaire, and again, if you are a consumer of institutional investment services or professional investment services, you have probably done one of these before. But let me just kind of outline the range of things you might see on one. And they're really broken down into two different qualities. I guess one would be really quantitative, and the other is much more qualitative. And the quantitative side of it is, frankly, stuff that we should be able to figure out on our own, asking questions like, how old are you? How much do you have saved? How much do you need in retirement? How far away from retirement are you? And from that, we derive what kind of information, Nate.
We call that one's ability to take risk. And so, like Nick said, this is math. You know, we can, of course, there are some assumptions involved, but from hard data, we can develop a picture of how much risk you should be able to undertake and your investment plan or your financial plan remain viable.
The other part of that would be what we might consider something that's a little bit more qualitative as far as the answers go. And that would be, as Nate said before we started recording, which I think was a perfect phraseology for that, the willingness to take risk. Tell me about that.
So one's willingness, as the label would imply, is how someone feels about risk. In reality, this is much more important. And on paper, it would seem less important because one's ability, we would think, in a perfect world would override everything. If you can undertake the risk, you should. But in practice, Nick and I have both seen that willingness trumps ability. So regardless of how much risk one is able to take, if their willingness is less than their ability, they will bail at some point, probably too soon, or they will begin to make irrational decisions and ultimately harm themselves. And so we have to ask these questions about how people feel about risk in general. And a lot of times in risk tolerance questionnaires, these come off as kind of goofy questions as, you know, if you went to a casino and you placed $8 on red, you know, it just kind of seems like it didn't have much to do at the with the topic at hand, but it's trying to gauge an assessment of how someone feels about risk. The problem with this, in my opinion, is that we are not psychologists or psychiatrists or whomever it is that determines that type of emotional feeling about something else. We're financial advisors. We're investment managers. And so in my personal opinion, even though regulators like to see these questions about how people feel about risk, I think that we should be looking at a couple of different things. One, I think that we should be trying to assess a maximum drawdown, right? So from peak to trough, what dollar amount decline could you see in your account before you believe you would start making some irrational decisions, or you feel like you would need to deviate from the plan that we have set forth? And this quantifies it, right? So someone can think at that moment, if I saw a negative X, Y, or Z amount in my account statement, this would hurt me, and I would feel differently about our strategy at that point in time. And ultimately, in my opinion, that's what most risk tolerance trust questionnaires are trying to get to, but everybody feels like they have to doll it up to, you know, justify their job or whatever else. The second component to that is clues that someone can give you about facts about their life. How have you acquired your wealth? Was it slow and steady? Are you a teacher and you've made periodic deposits of $20 over the course of your life and that's how you've accumulated your wealth? Or are you an entrepreneur and you have been investing in essentially your own ventures over the course of your life and you've lost money and made money and lost money and made money? Have you inherited most of your wealth? These things, over the course of a conversation, an advisor with some experience can kind of build an ancillary picture of what that person may be able to tolerate as far as investment risk. We can have a conversation with the client at that point, talk about these things. And this is the problem with those. I mean, they're kind of a blend between qualitative and quantitative because they're facts about the person's life that can generally be attributed to certain personality traits. But some advisors try to hide that from their client.
Right? In what sense? Give me some details on that statement.
So they'll hear these things, and a good advisor will pick up on these things, and they will understand, okay, this person was a teacher, and they have accumulated their wealth very slowly and steadily over the course of their life. I can see, based on their past investment experience, that they're not necessarily willing to take or have a ton of experience taking investment risk. So even though they're telling me that they're okay with this amount of risk, I'm going to dumb it down a little bit because I don't think that they're really able to take this amount of risk. That's dangerous. Even if we feel like the client's risk tolerance is something different than what they're telling us, we have to tell them why we feel something is X, Y, and Z. We can't just go behind their back and say, well, I'm going to tweak a few things in the portfolio and kind of dumb this down. But that is a much more simple process, you know, just collecting details about the person's life and asking them explicitly, what is the dollar amount decline that you would feel comfortable with? Can we now attribute this dollar amount decline as a proportional percentage of your portfolio moving forward? If this ever changes, please tell me.
You said something earlier that I think is interesting. You said, you know, we're not psychologists, but, and I agree with that statement, of course. One of the advantages to racking up several years in this business, though, is in one particular area of psychology, we do become somewhat experts, and that's behavioral finance.
Right, that's right.
And I'm going to kind of play out a scenario with Nate's help here to tell you. So we've been now in my career, in Nate's career, through two of the worst crashes in the last 100 years. The exception to that, maybe 1987 when we had that 25% flash crash. And then the Depression would really be the only other one that was that severe as we experienced in 2002 through 2002 and then 2007 through 2009. And generally what we find is that, and Nathan mentioned this earlier in the program, is that when people are getting used to and accustomed to several back-to-back years of rapid or even slow and steady gains, and they forget what the sting of seeing a rapid loss felt like, they have a tendency to push themselves into a higher level of risk tolerance because they kind of forget what that was like. We call it a hindsight bias. We start as humans to think that this is the way things will just continue to be because this is what we are used to.
Right.
And there's some different ways, and Nate said it pretty succinctly, that we just ask people, how much money are you comfortable losing? And I like to say it to people this way. If you knew with relative certainty that next year would be another 2008 and you were going to be fully invested in equity-based, stock-based portfolios similar to the S&P 500 index, would you feel comfortable losing 60%? So imagine opening a statement 12 months from now and you have $1 million account and you just realize you lost $600,000. Would you feel comfortable with that? I would be willing to bet that almost nobody would say, yeah, I'd feel comfortable with that.
Right.
And that's the problem that we run into, because if you come out of this as an aggressive investor and insist that we invest that way, you will be in a position where that is the kind of loss you will experience if we have another downturn like that.
And this is part of the problem, right? So if we pass out this investor risk tolerance questionnaire and the person answers it that way, and we can't have any other conversation because it would seem like, you know, we're coaching them into a particular strategy, and the regulator comes to perform our audit and we have their portfolio allocated differently than what their risk tolerance questionnaire says, we could lose our licenses. We could go out of business. And I don't want to say too much because I don't want to raise any eyebrows, but there is a big conflict of interest between the client and regulators, unfortunately, in this regard, is that we as the professionals, and ultimately it's put in place to take care of the client, because there are probably far more people who are ill-equipped to do this job than there are properly equipped to do this job.
True.
And so at the end of the day, it's probably doing more good than harm, but in those instances in which it's creating harm, it's creating a lot of harm. And as Nick said, you know, we get into these areas of complacency, right, where we do bring this hindsight bias forward. We project into the future, the very recent past, and so we assume that everything is going to continue to be okay, and it affects our risk tolerance. We believe that we could be more aggressive than we would be otherwise because we don't remember what it was like to be anything else. And then we also have this other compounding factor of a fear of missing out. When we hear our neighbor is doing so well, it makes us feel bad to believe that, oh, you know, with my piddly risk tolerance of I don't like taking excessive risk and everybody's making all this money without any kind of downside. Yeah, of course, people begin to stretch. And I think that at the end of the day, these types of metrics should not be so black and white. Yes, there should be the assessment of what do you believe your maximum drawdown would be, build a portfolio according to that in the context of their return objectives, and having an open conversation with the client that is not placed in this box of a risk tolerance questionnaire. The problem is that is hard for a regulator to regulate.
Yes.
And so we are in this almost impossible situation of trying to do our jobs and do our jobs well and not allow people to harm themselves, which they're going to do. This is going to happen. We already see it happening now. People are starting to stretch their risk tolerance. They're taking more risk than they would otherwise, even in a normal market environment, or certainly after the downturn. These same people would take zero risk, and now they're you know, stretching as
Let me stop you right there, because that's the next thing that I was going to bring up. What we saw in the beginning of 2009, after that horrendous crash of 2008, is if you were giving a new client a risk tolerance questionnaire, everybody was skewing themselves to the side of ultra-conservative people that now might come in and say, no, I'm ultra-aggressive. But after, again, that hindsight bias, after the sting of feeling that kind of pain, they don't want to experience that again, and then this kind of shifts from individual to individual over time.
And what's amazing from the practitioner's point of view is that people will even admit it at the time. I mean, I remember handing out risk tolerance questionnaires in 2009, 2010, and people saying, well, I used to be over here, but after 2008, I'm over here now. And so they will fully admit that when times are good, I feel like I can take a bunch of risk. I now have my tail between my legs. And unfortunately, people are doing this at the exact wrong times.
Absolutely.
But if we were given a little bit more autonomy to do our jobs as advisors, we might be able to help coach people about the sliding scale that is risk tolerance and expose their own biases to them and help them better understand, without coaching them or putting them in a particular box, how things change over time and how they may be exposing themselves to additional risk or not enough risk given the very recent past.
Sometimes I'll tell clients, you'll know that I'm doing my job well because you will never like what I'm suggesting
that
you
do. Absolutely.
when everyone wants to be aggressive, we're telling you to be more conservative and the opposite's also true.
And that is the most difficult part of our job. And honestly, there are a lot of folks who make an awful lot of money in this business by just doing whatever, you know, the client feels like they want to do at that moment. And I have personally seen, Nick, I know you have too, it can hurt the client at the end of the day. And so you don't want to be the enemy of your client, obviously, or you know, constantly being in conflict with your client. But these frank conversations are important. And unfortunately, I think there are not enough advisors having that conversation, or maybe not even enough clients willing to have that frank conversation. And certainly, I don't believe that regulators fully understand that that conversation needs to happen.
Well, after listening to this, hopefully the listener that may be a client of a financial advisor is thinking, yeah, I see where these guys are coming from. But the burning question is, what's the solution to the problem?
Okay, what we do know is that a risk tolerance does have to be established, right? So to manage a portfolio, we have to manage to an acceptable amount of risk, because risk is a very important part of investing.
And if I could, Nate, let's stop. This is a very, very important point. A lot of people come and hire a financial advisor, and I've heard it from the mouths of clients, I'm hiring you to make me money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I'm going to pay you, I'm hiring you to make me money. Otherwise, I could just go invest in the market and it is what it is. So what they're really saying is, I'm hiring you to do better than the market is. So when we look at a client's risk tolerance and move on to the next phase, which is building a portfolio, what do we do with a portfolio to reflect what the answers of that risk tolerance actually are?
So, under ideal circumstances, from an advisor's point of view, to make our lives as easy as possible, we would like to be able to determine what do you need to earn to meet your objectives,
mm-hmm.
right? So, we first start with a return, and then we determine what is the minimal amount of risk that we can take and still meet this return objective.
Mm-hmm. Ideally, or at least have a high likelihood of meeting it.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. In our using the tools that we have available to us. And of course, you have to build in margins of error and things like that. But in doing that, we would hopefully be able to meet the client's objectives and take the minimal amount of risk possible. The secondary question would be, is this too much risk for you?
Mm-hmm.
So is even this too much risk for you? And that's when we have to go into the risk assessment. But as you've just said, most clients, they want to hand their money over and they just say, I want to make as much money as possible because my neighbor just said he's making X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
And even if we explain it till we're blue in the face that you don't have to take this much risk to meet your objectives, it is human nature to want more, right? So even if we demonstrate that by taking this perhaps smaller amount of risk, you have a high probability of meeting your objectives. If we get much more risky than this, we increase the probability that you may not meet your objectives, because if we have some disruption here, we're going to hit a bump in the road. Yes, you could end up a multi-multi-millionaire, you know, if we take more risk and we do it appropriately. But the larger risk is to the downside, because particularly for us, we're dealing with retirees a lot of time, or pre-retirees. I can't remember your original question.
Well, it was, what do we do from the advisory side? And here's how I explain it to clients, and you tell me how you discuss it with the client. But I always tell when people ask the question, how much can I expect this equity-based portfolio to earn over time? And my response is, well, if you can tell me what the market's going to do over this set time period, I can tell you with a pretty high degree of certainty a very narrow range of outcomes of performance that we will generate. So based on what the underlying equity markets are doing, I can construct a portfolio that will reflect varying degrees of volatility around the performance of that portfolio. And so when I'm explaining to clients, here's what we're doing with your risk tolerance, if you're coming in with if the level of risk, I'm doing air quotes right now, of the S&P 500 is 50 and just swinging for the fences going nuts would be 100 and in straight cash would be 1, I would say to people, look, if you're coming in somewhere at a 25, and I know Nate hates to associate numbers with this kind of thing, but I would say we're going to try to generate about a quarter of the volatility of the S&P 500 if you're in that range. But if you come in at a 75, we can actually construct a portfolio that will generate roughly 25% more upside performance in the S&P and 25% more downside performance of the S&P. The problem that people have is they're always just thinking about, most of the time, that upside, and that's where they get into trouble when they experience that extreme volatility on the downside.
Well, and they're thinking about the upside at the exact wrong time, right? So when, unfortunately, when the market is in its last legs, which is typically when it's had a prolonged period of growth and very little volatility, and we have what's called a blow-off top. You know, everybody wants to get in the market, and mm-hmm. so it creates this.
Which
this
sounds
growth.
An awful lot like what we're experiencing right now.
Sure, that's right. That's when they want to start stretching, and they kind of throw caution to the wind and say, who cares what my risk tolerance is? When was the last time we saw a negative 5% pullback in the S&P 500? Who cares what my, you know, I want to make as much money as possible. The problem is that when the comeuppance arrives, and it always arrives, they come back, regardless of what they told you, and say, I lost a dollar in my account. You know, what's that? And so we do have to slap on these parameters. And I think that from the advisor's perspective, we do have to know what that maximum drawdown threshold is. So while I don't like to apply arbitrary numbers to this thing, I feel like that's a pretty concrete, objective parameter that we can say, this is as much risk as you could tolerate. If that is their objective, to just make as much money as possible, we can try to build a portfolio that should have no more downside risk than that ultimate number that they have provided us, and we'll just try to earn as much as we possibly can given that downside parameter, if that is their actual objective. But for most people, that's not really their objective.
Right.
They get blindsided by the greed and by the general atmosphere of everybody's making money except for me, and so they get separated from their financial plan, which has very clearly defined objectives, which are usually correlated with a required rate of return. And we can also usually pin to that an amount of variance that would be acceptable in the rate of returns over a period of time and a maximum drawdown, which over a prolonged period of time, people would be much happier with than these huge swings in volatility, unless you're a venture capitalist or me, for example, because I, for whatever reason, have very high risk tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cyclical, and it will happen probably every time. Unless we can kind of clear up some of these ideas about what risk tolerance actually is and get regulators and advisors on the side of their clients.
After listening to what we've said here, let me ask you the burning question, and this is a completely loaded question.
Okay.
It sounds like to me the best strategy might be to have a varying risk tolerance based on what's going on with the market, in that when things appear to be good and all signs seem to indicate that a prolonged period of equity price appreciation is the more likely scenario, we should feel comfortable taking a little bit more risk, picking up a little bit more aggressive portfolio. When all signs seem to be indicating we may be in for a downturn, maybe the better idea is to say, look, even though I'm usually a more aggressive investor, I'm going to be more conservative, invest more conservatively for now. That would seem like the ideal situation, but what would the problem with that be?
The problem is that because we're humans, that sliding scale, which would be ideal, obviously, if we could identify when the market was undervalued or overvalued and change the risk tolerance accordingly, human nature would have us doing the exact wrong thing at the exact right time, at the exact wrong time. And that's what we're seeing now, right? So for years, nobody has been willing to take risk. And over the last, 9 months approximately, everybody feels like they could just swallow the biggest pill ever and nothing bad will ever come of it. And that's what would happen if we allowed these risk tolerances to slide, which in my opinion is why it's so much more important to perform objectives-based investing, right? Because if you want your objective to be higher, then make your objective higher, and then we will invest according to that objective. But you can't just willy-nilly start to choose, you know, what your rate of return and what your risk tolerance is going to be, because you are going to make the wrong decisions. But if we can decide in advance, what are your objectives? We will try to meet these objectives with a minimal amount of risk, then a financial plan and an investment strategy will have more consistency over time, and we can point to it and say when times get good or bad, look, we're either hitting the target or we're missing the target. We either need to change things or we don't, but you can't change things based on the way your neighbor's portfolio is performing.
And so this is kind of a general overview of not just the risk tolerance questionnaire, which obviously we have a couple of issues with, but it's something that is maybe a necessary evil to use that word in our business, because we have to have it, because regulators are
Absolutely.
Going to come in here and look for it.
And not only do we have to have the risk tolerance questionnaire, which I don't know that we need to have a risk tolerance questionnaire, but we have to establish a tolerance for risk. We have to have that. We don't need a risk tolerance questionnaire. We do have to somehow establish a tolerance for risk.
And those are our honest to goodness thoughts about risk tolerance in the investor mind.